南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Hello, everyone. I hope this finds you healthy and secure. Fascinating, isn't it? This Gosho from Nichiren. We're delving into, right now, the nature of the Tripitaka, the first of the four levels, the four doctrinal teachings, the periods of teachings. So we're in the world of Shravaka, right? The world of learning right now. And one thing you may have noticed already, as we start to talk about the seven sages stage, it doesn't sound all that different, does it? Surprise! You know, to all those groups and organizations that would have you burn at the stake for reading anything other than the Lotus Sutra or Nichiren's Gosho, we're reading the very earliest teachings of Shakyamuni, and ding, 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 they ring right through. Now, their context is very different. So don't be fooled that you can just go and practice any of these others and attain your enlightenment. The teaching for our epoch, our time, is the Lotus Sutra. The Lotus Sutra is the culminating teaching, the context, the way of self-actualizing, self-manifesting Buddha. Yeah. No doubt. Not trying to cast doubt. What, would Nichiren try to cast doubt on that? Why is Nichiren talking about this? Obviously, to address those students, disciples, followers, whatever you want to call those who are listening to Nichiren and taking his guidance, as you and I are, yeah, as to how to practice Buddhism correctly, as per the directions of Shakyamuni Buddha, and that is Lotus Sutra practice. So, in order to quell any doubts, Nichiren's going over the entire scholarship of Shakyamuni's teachings, and right now we're in that first stage, the Tripitaka, the three baskets. And so as we continue, we're now going to talk about the seven sages, those who go the right way to nirvana. They're on the path, yes? Number one, to be free of delusions in view, kendo, those who practice Buddhism under the guidance of others, considered inferior capacity. Don't get hung up on these words. Remember, these are translations. Just look at the context and the order in which these things, there are hierarchies and so forth. Don't get too hung up on the language. Just go with it, okay? Also, those who practice Buddhism seeing the Dharma with no help from others, you get your insights immediately from reading Shakyamuni's words and the doctrines, the commentaries, right? That's considered superior capacity. So there you have this seesaw. If you're gaining your insights through other people showing you what things mean, that's great. But there's obviously a difference in your capacity to understand the teachings from somebody who reads the teachings and goes, "Oh, crap, now I get it." In truth, we're a mixture of both, all of us, right? Second, to be free of delusions of thought as opposed to in view. So let's see what's the difference here. This is in Japanese, shudo. Those who understand Buddhism by faith, You know how much I despise that word. Considered inferior capacity. In other words, you understand Buddhism as something that will lead you there eventually. You don't know it. You know, this is about thought. You just are committed to it. Okay, that's good. Those who understand the truth by their own wisdom, superior capacity. You see the difference? Dedicated to the rituals, listening, going to the events, that's one thing, that's laudable. But by studying and from your own experience, witnessing within your own life, your own mind, this totally makes sense. I get this. That's far superior, yeah? Those who understand the truth by experience, inferior and superior capacities, right? Both. Three, to wipe out both delusions in view and in thought, and to have nothing more to learn, Mugakudo, or Arhat. Remember, these are Hinayana teachings. So, to this Agama period, the Hinayana scope, the Shravaka, the idea that you can understand all these concepts, experience them in your mind, well, that's Buddhahood. So you're done. There's nothing else you can learn. You just have to actualize it now. Remember the context of this. This is just a first step. It's like graduating high school. It's very laudable. Everyone should do it. But it's not a PhD. It's not a master's. It's not even an associate's degree. You need to dig a little deeper and apply what you think you know. And it's interesting, listen carefully to the words here, that you have nothing more to learn, but that doesn't mean you know how to do it. You just understand. Those who wait for the time and chance to obtain emancipation, inferior capacity. Think of those waiting to die to enter Buddhahood or the Pure Land. That's absolutely incorrect. Those who obtain emancipation without waiting any longer, that's superior capacity. So again, these ring true with what we're doing, but understand they're in different contexts. Keep that in mind. I'm reminded of the early chapters of the Lotus Sutra where Shakyamuni says to the large gathering, okay, now I'm going to tell you what Buddhahood is like, something I've never explained before. And the 8,000, I think, arhats who think they have nothing more to learn, you go, Yeah, we know. We studied, we know. We don't need to hear this again. And they leave. And what does Shakyamuni call them? What does the Lotus Sutra say they are? People who believe they have achieved what they have not. Different context, yeah? So, continuing. Those who are liberated from the delusions in view and thought are called sages. They've accomplished a lot. The sages have three ranks, Kendo, Shudo, and Magakudo, right? That's what we just read. Kendo is the rank in which only the delusions in view, not in thought, are eliminated. So what does that mean? Those in this rank are called the sages who have attained the first stage of practice. We're just starting out. The sages of this rank are born in either the realm of human beings or the realm of heaven, rapture, in the world of desire, and will never fall into the four evil realms of hell, hungry spirits, beasts, and asuras. In general, this is the Hinayana teaching. Of course, we travel through all the 3,000 realms in each and every thought moment, so remember, this is early teaching, so we're keeping things simple. Therefore, Grandmaster Tendai says, quote, because they are free of the delusions in view, they will keep themselves away from the four realms. See, they'll tend to stay away. They'll recognize when they're falling into those realms. In the annotations on the Great Concentration and Insight by Grandmaster Miao Lo, however, since they've not been liberated from the delusions in thought yet, they still have greed, anger, and ignorance in mind. So how can you have greed, anger, and ignorance in mind and not know the lower realms? See the contradiction there? So on the one hand, there's the teaching in order to enable and to get people to develop a consciousness, an awareness of consciousness. And then there's the teaching that obviates where they truly are. So see, this is the seesaw in Buddhism, if you will. The truth is there, but the people's capacity to get the truth, it's expediently taught. It's given examples and hopeful examples of training, but the actuality may not follow what the understanding of the teaching gives you. Does that make sense? You may understand, I may show you dozens of quadratic equations, and the form and the look of quadratic equations will mean that you can probably pick one out of a bunch of different things. But do you understand what a quadratic equation does? What is its function? Not necessarily. Because they have greed, they get a wife, though they never have illicit relations with wives of others. True, they have anger, but they never kill living beings. When they plow a field, worms and insects move away a few inches. Because they are ignorant, they do not know that they are the sages who have attained the first stage of practice. The Bhāṣaraṇ, the Abhidharma, Mahāvishvasarsatra, says that a sage who has attained the first stages of practice has sex with his wife 81 times in a single night. I don't know what good that is. Maybe it's the amount of penetrations. I don't know. I don't think it's important to understand that dissection. But I think, and in the relative teachings of the time, there's a reason why they have that specificity. Grandmaster Tendai interprets that as the reason why worms and insects shy away a few inches when a sage who has attended the first stage of practice plows a field is because he keeps precepts which prevent him from committing the evil by the virtue of eliminating delusions in view and thought and understanding the wisdom of voidness. There's that voidness again. So basically, that's a storytelling way of explaining something we've all probably heard is new member benefit. As soon as you start practicing Buddhism, first of all, you're generally excited about doing it. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? Am I going to see results? I want to see results. And so because you have that ichinen, that volition, that energy to accomplish, to see the Buddha, because you are, as Nichiren says, single-mindedly seeking Buddha, your, I will say, minor karma, your less energetic, less attached karma will break down very easily. And you will notice a lot of little changes in your life. They may seem large, and indeed they may be. But in the scope of all the karma that creates the potentials and the manifestations from potentials of the entire universe, let alone our species and you specifically, it's a small thing. So it crumbles very quickly and you notice it because you're really aware now. But you don't understand the profundity, the depth, the dominoes of karma that are being touched on. The sages who have attained the fourth stage of practice are called arhats, who have eliminated delusions and have nothing more to learn. So they understand. They understand the nature of all delusions and that everything is basically empty, nothing to embrace, but only at that level. And yet, that's amazing, right? So you could see why they were defined in a certain class as arhats. And not to be reborn. In other words, no backsliding back to, into lower worlds. They're still there to be sure, but their tendency is completely shifted away from them in order to live in an enlightened state. Not Buddha, although in Hinayana might be considered to be the highest state in Buddhism, therefore, hard to differentiate, right? Remember, context. They are also called by those who will never be reborn in the triple world because they have been freed from the suffering of birth and death, which you know is birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, right? They didn't know that then. They have already eliminated the delusions in view and thought so completely that they have no primary and environmental causes by which they will be born in the six realms of the triple world. Therefore, when their present life comes to an end, they will not be born in the triple world again, for they have no delusions in view and thought. So that's, you could see where this could lead to nihilism. Because if that's your understanding of Buddhism, then wouldn't there be a tendency to say, wow, I'll get out of here free and clear because this life is suffering. And if I can get out of here with no remainder, no causes to reinstantiate another life, then I've succeeded. Because this life is so bad, obviously. That's what that's pointing to, right? If you choose that understanding, then you're a nihilist. You believe life is bad, and the best thing you can do is manipulate your mind so that it no longer wants to be life. And so death is your great savior. I call that a cult of death, just like Christianity, Hebrew religions, Muslims, all of them, they're cults of death. Nothing good comes in this life. You have to endure, combat, fight, suffer, and when you're done, you get to go to a happy place, hopefully. I mean, has not human species had enough of that? Isn't it possible that this life could be the greatest thing you ever experienced? Look at the life of the universe. The more we learn about the universe, how precious and singular we are, wouldn't this be the most valuable? Look at diamonds. It's just a rock. But because diamonds are scarce and hard to find and hard to cut and hard to polish, we value them as great stones. It's just rock. So why don't we see human life the same way? How precious is human life in the scope of the universe, let alone on this planet, or solar system, or galaxy? There's something really missing here. So these, let me continue with Nichiren. The purpose of the Tripitaka teaching is to emancipate people from the six realms of the triple world. Now that's obvious to us because we practice Lotus Sutra Buddhism. But to the people of that day, that meant leaving this life. You and I understand that the life they're leaving is this moment and into the next. It is Buddhism is for this life, this human existence, this sentient time period, the opportunity to understand the immensity and preciousness of life. Not to get rid of it, to get rid of the things that create tension, anxiety, and suffering in our minds. So let's continue. As a result, because the teaching reveals no place but the triple world to attain emancipation, Sravakas and Pratyekabuddha are unaware of the existence of the Pure Land where bodhisattvas are born. They also do not know that they still possess other evil passions and attachments besides the delusions in view and thought. Sravaka and Pratyekabuddha believe they will eliminate the cause of being reborn in the triple world if they do away with the delusions in view and thought, and that they will exist in a void. See how they don't understand what that means, emptiness? They call it a void, like it's another place. Where there is no body or mind. Right? What do we call that? Death? Since they will have transformed the body to ashes and annihilated consciousness. See, from that understanding, once again, we become nihilists, right? Thus it is said that men of the two vehicles cannot be saved by the Tripitaka teachings, and that they will never be able to become Buddhas without the teaching of the Lotus Sutra. Do you understand now? The context of the Lotus Sutra is self-actualizing Buddha. The context of the Tripitaka is just to get the hell out of here. That's missing the grand vision by focusing very narrowly on the early teachings of creating capacity, creating a mindfulness, an awareness of the mind. You can't stop there. You haven't gotten the full picture. Sravaka, with inferior capacities, need to be born three times to complete the practice of the Tripitaka teaching. See how they're so focused on the life and death of a man, a woman, not women, they're not even counted amongst this at that time, right? While those Sravakas with superior practices require 60 kalpa. Some Sravaka with superior capacities may go up to the level of an arhat during a lifetime. They could. Pratyekabuddha with inferior capacities need to be born four times. Why more? They supposedly know more. Why do they have to go through this more? Or is that the experience of the teaching they're talking about? Hard to discern from the translation, yeah? And Pratyekabuddha with superior capacities require 100 kalpa of practice to become a bodhisattva. So isn't that a major contradiction right there? If a Pratyekabuddha with superior capacities requires 100 kalpa, many, many lifetimes worth of practice just to become a bodhisattva, how is it that that they can learn everything, not need to know anything else, and terminate their existence just this once? There's contradiction here, right? Bodhisattvas choose to remain with ordinary people in order to save them. So it's a choice. But what is it a choice of? A choice of, I'm not going to die, I'm going to stick around so that I can help enlighten others, so they can become arhats? Pratyekabuddhas? It's a very incomplete statement. Bodhisattvas have not eliminated the delusions in view and thought, but have kept control of them. So now it's hard. Arhat, bodhisattva, Pratyekabuddha, it's like they're taking turns being superior. It's hard to see the hierarchy here, yeah? They have made the four great vows to save the people and have been practicing the six paramita and have spent three asamkaya kalpa and 100 great kalpas to become lesser Buddhas of accommodative body of the Tripitaka teaching. Only when the bodhisattvas of the Tripitaka teachings become Buddhas can they completely eliminate the delusions in view and thought. So is this the identity the arhats assume? It's not clear. The delusions in view are divided into five meanings. The first view is to have evil passions by being attached to one's own self. Second is to have a view attached to an extreme idea, such as thinking that our body and soul, because we don't have a soul in Buddhism, so what's that, will disappear when we die, or that our self will exist eternally after we die. That's the soul idea, right? But that's not Buddhism, that's Jainism, or something else. The third view is to deny the law of cause and effect and become attached to dangerous ideas. Fourth is to believe false thoughts are excellent. And fifth is to misunderstand the causes for being born in the realm of heaven or the way of attaining emancipation into enlightenment. There are 88 evil passions in the delusions in view that are based on the five wrong views above. The delusions in thought are divided into four: greed, anger, ignorance, and arrogance. Of the delusions in thought, there are 81 evil passions based on these four wrong thoughts. Detailed explanations on the doctrines of Tripitaka teaching are found in the Agama Sutras in 40 fassals, the Bhashyaran in 200 fassals, the Shoriran, the Kenshuran, and the Kusharan. In particular, the school of Buddhism called Kushashu explains these doctrines with some accuracy. Some Mahayana teachings, such as sutras expounded during the Hodo period and the Nirvana Sutra, also mention the doctrines to some extent. However, no Tripitaka doctrine is mentioned in the Flower Garland, the Wisdom, or the Lotus Sutras. So, it's not by any means a comprehensive dive into all of the precepts and rules and contrived hierarchies and so on and so forth of Hinayana Buddhism, or Tripitaka to be accurate for this exercise. But Nichiren gives us a pretty good flavor of the incompleteness, the somewhat contradictory nature of some of the ideas and rules. Yeah. And then he points to schools of compendiums of commentaries and sutras that dive deep into those things, if that's what you want to go check out for whatever reason you need to do it. But now he's going to move on to the second doctrinal section, the common teaching. And so we should be listening along to this and studying this in terms of not necessarily looking for things to go dive into and analyze, but now that we have a good idea of the flavor of Tripitaka, how then is it distinguishable from the common teaching, right? Why do we have these four separate doctrinal teachings, these periods of teaching? And in what way, given this synopsis that we're given, does the synopsis of the common teaching differ? And then once we know that, how will the next section differ? And the next? And I think in that thinking, things will become much clearer So let's continue. Yeah, we're only halfway. So the common teaching. The common teaching is the beginning of the Mahayana teaching, and it preaches the three learnings to observe Buddhist precepts, to concentrate on meditation, and to gain wisdom. So far, not that different sounding from Tripitaka. Let's go on. What is mainly taught in this teaching does not go beyond the six realms of the triple world. Well, hell. So how is it different from Tripitaka? However, a few bodhisattvas with superior capacity may perceive the teachings beyond the six realms of the triple world by hearing the principle of the common teaching. The Shravaka, Pratyekabuddha, and bodhisattvas all learn the same teaching and eliminate the delusions in view and thought. In addition, some Shravaka and Pratyekabuddha may enter the state of turning the body to ashes and annihilating consciousness, while others do not. What we identified in Tripitaka as arhat, right? Arhat. There are 10 stages of development in the way of practicing the common teaching. Oh, well, finally, something sounds new and different. 10 stages. You know, we had 7 sages in Tripitaka, but now we're going to talk about 10 stages of development. Okay. The first kane stage is the three wisdoms, which leads to wise men, something we learned in Tripitaka, although in common teaching it may be spoken of differently, right? So, second is the sho stage, the four virtuous roots. Well, we had that in the Tripitaka, didn't we? Leads to wise men. Bachinin stage, the sages, equivalent to the rank of kendo, to eliminate delusions in view. The Ken state, sages who attain the first stages of practice, and Baku stage, to eliminate delusions in thought, also the Ryoku stage. The Iben stage, arhat, to completely eliminate delusions in view and thought, and Pratyekabuddha stage, to eliminate delusions in view and thought. And here are the more developed, maybe, stages 9 and 10, Bodhisattva stage, and no description is given there, and the Buddha stage, to completely eliminate delusions in view and thought. So, all right, it's listed different, it's separated different. I'm sure as we drill down, we would see more intricate differences in explanation and understanding and meaning. But on the surface, hasn't moved the needle a whole lot. So let's continue. The doctrine of the common teaching is not limited to being expounded in any particular sutra, but found in such Hodo and Hanya sutras as the Wisdom Sutra, the Sutra of the Heart of Wisdom, or the Heart Sutra, the Sutra of Meditation on the Buddha of Infinite Life, there's our buddy Amida, the Amitabha Sutra, literally Amida, the Sutra of the Buddha of Infinite Life, and the Diamond Wisdom Sutra, the Diamond Sutra. It takes numerous dust particle kalpas to become a Buddha by practicing this common teaching, though it is possible that a few bodhisattvas with superior capacity sometimes attain Buddhahood immediately. Thus, these two teachings, the Tripitaka teaching discussed earlier, and this common teaching, do not espouse the idea that ordinary people in the six realms originally have the Buddha nature. A big missing piece. This missing piece is the reason for the nihilism of the earlier teachings. I'm not saying they're all explicitly nihilist. I'm saying they lead easily to a nihilistic view, because they don't understand that Buddha, the mind state of Buddha, is timeless. It's inherent in everything that's manifest in this universe. It's not something that can only be achieved by, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. It is the reason for the alphabet in the first place. Every letter has it. the entirety of language. If you don't know that, then you think you're leaving something behind to go elsewhere. And that's not the case in Buddhism. The elsewhere is simply a shift of perception in where you are right now. The contemporaneity of that is a huge missing ingredient from the early teachings. But he couldn't give people that early on because they couldn't accept it. They wouldn't understand it. They didn't have the ability to even understand the profundity of that statement. So he had to lead them along to understand partially. Yeah, you see how this is working? In fact, having said that, he's now going to move on to the distinct teaching. He's already left this second component because there was really more elaboration on the first period. The second period elaborated further, added a little more definition to what Bodhisattva may be and Buddha realm. So in the distinct teaching, the teaching also expounds the three learnings, the precepts, meditation, and wisdom. The distinct teaching is only for bodhisattvas and not for Shravakas and Pratyekabuddhas. So you have to achieve a certain level of knowledge with your brain, with your samsaric mind, with your earthly experience. And once you have developed and accomplished yourself in those teachings and reached a level of bodhisattva, now you will have a more expansive, a different training, right? The precepts of bodhisattva are classified in the three kinds of pure precepts: to stop evil acts, to do good, and to save others, which you could argue are all different descriptions of the same behavior, albeit separated into three aspects here. The five precepts, the eight precepts, the 10 good precepts, the 250 precepts, the 500 precepts, we've already talked about those. And likewise, the 88 precepts, 10 major and 10 major and 48 minor, of the Brahmanet Sutra, the 10 inexhaustible precepts of the Bodhisattva Necklace Sutra, the 10 kinds of precepts of the Flower Garland Sutra, the 5 branches of precepts for self-practice, the 10 precepts for protecting others of the Nirvana Sutra, and the 10 precepts of the Great Wisdom Discourse, all are designed to stop evil acts, to stop behavior that pulls you away from your most life-affirming behavior, a bodhisattva. The precepts practiced to do good include all the 84,000 dharmas. The precepts meant to save others are the 4 great vows. The second of the three learnings, learning to concentrate on meditation, is to master the 4 kinds of meditation: observation, training, education, and mastery. The third of the three learnings, learning to gain wisdom, is the doctrine that the 10 realms all stem from the mind. So this is a big aha moment of the third, the distinct teaching period. That the 10 realms all stem from the mind, that they're not places we're stuck in, behaviors that are mixed with our environment, somehow either we're victims of or creating. They're not samsaric things. They're all within the 10 realms, manufactured, constructed, contrived, understood, experienced within the mind. Not until we get to the training for bodhisattvas is this made not only clear, but taught, trained. There are 52 ranks in practicing the distinct teaching, including 10 in each of the following categories: belief, abode, practice, and turning, and foundation. So what do these words mean? In addition, there is one each in the supplement and ultimate categories, bringing the total to 52 ranks. So these are the stages of bodhisattva practice, yeah? Excuse me, I have to rearrange myself here. It's embarrassing, sorry, just had to do it. There are 52 ranks in practicing the distinct teaching. The 52 ranks are the 10 stages of conviction, possibility exists of falling into the lower realms, ordinary people and bodhisattvas who have not eliminated delusions in view and thought yet. So they're still working on what's called here faith, but it's conviction. It's a concerted commitment, yeah? And there are 10 stages of that. Then there are 10 abodes, which with the 10 practices intermixed with the 10 turnings, because as you practice and you live in and your mind shifts, all three are interrelated, never falling into the lower realms, not an easy task. Bodhisattvas who have eliminated countless dust particle delusions in view and thought. This is karma busting, right? Changing our tendencies and conditions and blasting through them. They don't go away. We don't annihilate them, but we don't tend toward. We don't stay in those areas, those lower realms where we're in anguish or constantly hungry, animality, where we compete with others, get more and more calm. Those realms are still there, but we cease to slide into them so easily, and we can actively push ourselves from. So this is what abodes is talking about, yeah? Where's your home base, mentally speaking? Then there's the 10 foundations, which is related to supplement teachings. Bodhisattvas who've eliminated illusions. So by that point, you're not fooled by anything. You're not influenced by anything. You witness it. You observe it with either fascination or compassion, right? But you're not attached to it. It doesn't affect you. And ultimate, Buddhas who have completely eliminated illusions. Because that is Buddha, is no longer affected, no longer influenced by what we observe and witness, right? The distinct teaching is a Mahayana doctrine that expounds the three learnings, precepts, meditation, and wisdom. The Buddhist precepts in this teaching, different from those of the Tripitaka, or common teachings, are the diamond treasure precepts which will never be broken. So these are karmic rules of behavior that are recognizable in all manifestations. Bodhisattvas of the distinct teachings are not intimidated by the three evil realms of hell, nor are they afraid of the realms of hungry souls and beasts, right? Hell, hunger, animality. Instead, they fear the practice of the two vehicles. Regarding them as the true three evil realms. Wow, what a shift. So all this teaching that's gone on in the Tripitaka and expanded in the common teachings for the Sarvaka, the Pratyekabuddha, the Arahant, to a Bodhisattva, Those are the three evil realms. Why would he say that? Because it's easy to be sucked in to that limited thinking. It's easy to be sucked in with vanity. I want to be the wisest. I want to be a sage. You see? That sucks your spirit down, sucks your life condition down. So to a bodhisattva who's coursing in excelling in mental perception, to be swayed toward these other teachings of the earlier teachings is actually a tremendously negative thing. Got to stay away from that. And people ask me sometimes, why is there still this great rivalry between quote unquote Hinayana and Mahayana? Well, this is it. In your stages of excellence, you cannot afford, because you're still a human and could be influenced, to slip backwards into lower, earlier teachings, because those capacities, you're training to go beyond those capacities, right? Why would a major league sports athlete hang up his or her training and presence and membership in their professional career to go play college ball or high school sports? It would be too easy to do, and for the athlete would represent a fall from grace. Yeah. It's a bad analogy, but it creates the picture. Yeah. As a consequence, according to the Great Wisdom Sutra, bodhisattvas who have indulged in the five wonderful desires for a period of incalculable kalpa, as many as the sands of the great Ganges River, are not violators of the bodhisattva precepts. That's just what they did along the way. However, they will be breaking the rule if they think of themselves as the two vehicles, Sravaka, Pratyeka Buddha, for even a moment. Understand there's a distinction between your practice now and what those practices are. Again, as I said earlier, context is everything. The five wonderful desires consist of form, sound, smell, taste, and touch. The first five consciousnesses, yeah? The desire of form refers to attachment to figures of men and women, such as those with penciled blue eyebrows, white faces, and white teeth, right? Being attracted, falling prey to the machinations of human species. For what? For why would this be a problem? Sex is a central issue in the earlier teachings, because sex is where we're most vulnerable to fall prey to our basest desires. And they are based desires, because that's what creates formations of the entire universe, is this desire. It's an attraction to begin with, to form. You see? So Buddhism, intellectually, is very aware that sexuality, attraction, is a very, very consistent tripwire. Yeah. More so than food. The desire of sound is attachment to the music or notes, such as a harp, a pipe, or wind, and stringed instruments. The desire of, notice that it's not saying that those instruments and those sounds are evil. It's the attachment to them that's evil. The attachment to us that make, to them, that make us fall from our higher mind state. We become romanced, intertwined in the sound. Which is also why when we chant Namo Myoho Renge-kyo, the sound we're creating is the invocation of the law in print, in calligraphy, in our minds, with every sense we have directed back to Buddha-ness. All of these attractions are turned on themselves. Let's go on. The desire of smell is attachment to fragrances such as the scent of aloe or sandalwood, or pheromones, sweat, flesh. The desire of taste is attachment to the flavor of eating such things as wild boar or deer. Again, I remind you, it's not that the boar or the deer or the flesh or the sex is evil in and of itself. No, that's what religion says. What Buddhism says is there's no problem with any of that. It's your attitude about it that's the problem. It's your voracious distraction that brings you down into the lower realms and then makes it tough to come back out of. Then you become greedy, angry, avarice, animal, because you're just following those attractions. It's not the fault of what's attracting you. It's the fault of your mind, your attitude. The desire of touch is attachment to the feeling of soft skin. Not just any skin, but soft skin. This sutra states that even if one has been absorbed in the five desires for a period of incalculable kalpa, as many as the sands of the Ganges River, one is not a violator of the bodhisattva precepts. Because you're a samsaric being. Yeah, we know you weren't born a diamond, that it took work to get you there. Yeah, in other words, that stuff's not bad in its very nature. It is the attachment that's the problem. However, to have the mind of the two vehicles for even a moment, the sutra states, is to break the bodhisattva precepts. Because now you've let your mind slide downward into the realm of attachments. You've slipped. It's not that you shouldn't experience those things. It's that if you see yourself in any way, label yourselves, perceive your practice as no different from Sravaka and Pratika Buddha, then you've either missed it or you've decided to relinquish all of the learning and practice that you've accomplished. It's a terrible thing. Don't do that. Dai Xian states in his interpretation of the Brahmanet Sutra, quote, "Even though one is defiled by greed, one's merit of having kept the precepts is not lost, because one still has the aspiration for Buddhahood." You're going to slip from time to time. Therefore, one cannot be said to have violated the precepts. He goes on, to be fascinated with the precepts of the two vehicles is to violate the bodhisattva precepts. See the difference? This is why pre-Lotus Mahayana sutras, such as the Flower Garland Sutra, the Wisdom Sutra, and various sutras of the Hodo, the expanded period, very much detest the two vehicles. So it's not a recent phenomena that there's this abhorrence of the two vehicles, the Hinayana. It's part of the teachings to avoid backsliding into that at all, if at all possible, right? It shouldn't be a perception. Once you practice as bodhisattva, then everything you perceive, though they may be the same things, you don't see your mind as, you don't accept your mind state to be in those lower mindsets, because those lower mindsets, remember, learning and realization, remember those Ichantikas, the people of the Sravaka and Pratyeka Buddhas, have the false impression that Buddhahood is achieved by leaving this life. And a bodhisattva whose life is dedicated to being in this life is the antithesis of that. There's the dividing line. If you're looking for the stick in the sand, right? Omitted here are a meditation and wisdom, the two other learnings in the three learnings of the distinct teaching. The Brahmanet Sutra preaches, quote, to observe the Buddha's precepts is, so to speak, like the flat ground. To concentrate on meditation is like a house, and to gain wisdom is like a light. Speaking of the Mahayana Bodhisattva precepts, human beings, beasts, those who have been sterilized or those who are bisexual are all equally given the same Bodhisattva precepts. What an interesting statement that is 3,000 years ago. Again, sexuality. It doesn't matter what your sexuality is, how you express your lust, your desire for flesh, sound, smell, taste. What matters is your attitude about it, your attachment to it. Are you pulled physically, mentally, to activities, or do you see them beautifully detached, de-attached, and therefore you can participate without falling victim to your lower tendencies? Not an easy task. The distinct teaching preaches that all people can become Buddhas only after practicing in each of the 52 ranks for as long as many hundred thousand kalpas, and then teaching and converting the rest of the people. Therefore, no bodhisattvas ever became a Buddha during a lifetime or by undergoing just one practice. Again, the limitation. Buddha is somewhere else. Buddha is something that you're not likely to achieve in your life. Any bodhisattva can become a Buddha only after experiencing all kinds of practices. And this is why I say to you, don't just read the Lotus Sutra. Read other sutras. Read other commentaries. Understand what those are about. We're secure. We're practicing Namu Myoho Renge-kyo. Don't drop that. That's your self-manifestating Buddha. But don't be ignorant about how this teaching stands on the shoulders of everything. Study science. Study biology. Study poetry. Because all of it feeds into Namu Myoho Renge-kyo. And you're constantly expanding experience of all potential manifesting, the engine of life of the universe. This is not all about just Buddhism. It's about the mind and the Buddha mind that's not constricted solely to the experience of this practice, but to use this practice to have a much broader vision and understanding of all phenomena. So don't be afraid to study something else. Being cloistered in a monastery isn't the way of practice for us. It's not the way of practice for the Lotus Sutra. The entire world and everything it contains and does is our practice of Buddhism, is our Sangha. Though some of it may be very lower world tendencies, through Buddhahood, we can experience them without being attracted to them and see with wisdom how to raise the life conditions of those who are attached to those, to violence, to hunger, animality. We live in that period of time when those three lower worlds are dominant. I don't need to give you examples, do I? Therefore, no bodhisattva has ever become a Buddha during a lifetime. Sad. It is as if particles of dust were accumulated to build Mount Sumeru. This is clearly explained in the Flower Garland Sutra, the various sutras of the Hodo period, the Wisdom Sutra, the Brahmanet Sutra, the Bodhisattva Necklace Sutra, and so on. All beings except the two vehicles are allowed to receive the Mahayana Bodhisattva precepts. Grandmaster Miao Lo states in his annotations on the Great Concentration and Insight, quote, though I looked through all the pre-Lotus Mahayana sutras, I find no sutra that explains the obtaining of Buddhahood by the two vehicles. Only in the Lotus. So now we come to the perfect teaching. And with that, we'll have to leave that for the next video because I've gone on too long already. But this is exciting, isn't it? It really expands our perspective on the value of this practice. It's so singular. All right. I'm going to let you go. Thank you again for listening, for downloading the podcasts, wherever you get them, the Buddhahood podcast. Use the website, use the bookstore, get yourself a mandala if you don't have one already. Namo myo renge kyo. Please take care of your health. Be kind to yourself. And I will see you in the next one. Guaranteed. All right. Bye for now.